Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And another day, no doubt, where somebody in some corner of the political world, at some edge of the political spectrum, will be claiming that some opponent is violating the Constitution of the United States. Actually, it's gotten a bit tiresome. I don't think that in the past we had such regular resorts to the Constitution as the final decider of political questions, but that is in part a function of the Supreme Court having jumped in and made virtually everything, every policy decision, every political decision, a constitutional issue. To try to understand how this works, there is a new and invaluable resource. It is a handy-dandy guide, part of that series of politically incorrect guides. This one by Kevin R.C. Gutzman, who is a law professor. He's also a historian. He has written the politically incorrect guide to the Constitution. And we welcome Professor Gutzman. He is a professor of law and of American history at Western Connecticut State University. But in terms of people's misunderstanding about the Constitution, what is the most prevalent, the most damaging, the most widespread mistake that people make when they refer to the Constitution of the United States?
Well, they tend to follow the judges in believing that every question is a federal question. So you have to understand that there's a major distinction to be made between the Constitution itself, as it was explained to the people when they were ratifying it, and what's called constitutional law, on the other hand, which is the body of decisions from courts supposedly interpreting it. There have been, over time, numerous decisions in the body of constitutional law, quote-unquote, interpreting the Constitution in ways totally at variance with the Constitution that people agreed to live under in the first place. And what that's led to is a situation today in which we have a system in many ways entirely opposite the one that was ratified in the late 18th century, entirely opposite the one the American people decided they wanted to live with.
And you know what? My favorite example of that is the reapportionment cases that the court handled in the 1960s. And just to explain to people what we're talking about, one important case in that string of them was Baker v. Carr, where what they're saying is that the way that states have set up their own governments is somehow in violation of the federal constitution. States used to have state senates that where every county would get one state senator just for that county, and the state house of representatives would be apportioned just by population, like the U.S. House of Representatives. But the Supreme Court was able to make stick with literally one decision overturning 49 state constitutions. How do they get away with it?
Well, the reason they get away with it, I think, is that we have a tendency in America to defer to lawyers. We see ethics panels composed of lawyers. We hear lawyers ask their opinions about foreign policy and medical ethics, and I don't know why people are so prone to defer to lawyers. I think Americans' attitude generally about the behavior of the Supreme Court is often we find their decisions really impossible to understand, and so it must be that they're just more intelligent than we are.
What's the alternative? In other words, if people were not so willing to defer to judges and to defer to court decisions that change everything overnight and overturn the whole political process, what's the alternative to people simply saying, well, the court's decided, we now have to follow it?
Well, there are two mechanisms actually provided by the Constitution for reining in federal courts when they decide to legislate instead of actually applying the law. One is impeachment. And actually, in the Jefferson administration at the beginning of the 19th century, the Jeffersonian Republicans tried to impeach a justice named Samuel Chase, who had been completely abusing his office. He had been asking grand juries to indict particular people. He had been excluding evidence that was offered by defense counsel. He had been refusing to allow defense counsel to interrogate witnesses and so on. And he had been reading grand jury's charges, calling Thomas Jefferson an atheist and this kind of stuff. So Congress impeached, the House impeached him. And then the Senate decided by the narrowest vote possible not to remove him from office because they decided that high crimes and misdemeanors had to be indictable crimes. This was an erroneous decision. And actually, the history of that phrase, high crimes and misdemeanors, shows that abuse of the Constitution was one way, was one kind of offense that the impeachment power was historically used to correct.
But
so
you,
we can bring back the power of impeachment.
You
that's
don't really
one.
Expect that, though. I mean,
I think actually, if people were educated about what the Constitution is supposed to mean, we could use both of the mechanisms for reigning in courts. One is, again, impeachment of judges who simply abuse their office. The other one is legislation from Congress denying federal courts jurisdiction over particular kinds of cases. And the Congress has almost completely unlimited power to deprive federal courts of jurisdiction of any kind of case it wants to. So where for example, you have a court that says, you know what, yesterday we all agreed that there's no federal right to burn a flag, but today we think it's really a good thing if we say there is a right to burn a flag. There's no reason why these people who have sworn to uphold the Constitution and today are abusing their office to thwart the idea that this is a Republican government shouldn't be removed from office, and there's no reason why their court shouldn't be deprived of jurisdiction over cases involving burning of flags.
Well,
it's not speech, it's not press, it's not anything that federal judges were supposed to be able to decide we have to allow.
On the one hand, it seems to me that it is conceivable that there is some future Congress that would put limitations on jurisdiction. In other words, saying that this is the area in which we will allow courts to have their jurisdiction, but not this.
Right.
That's conceivable, but impeachment, given the recent experience with the impeachment of a president of the United States that failed, there'd be so little political will. I mean, remember last time when Gerald Ford, among others, was trying to impeach Justice William O. Douglas of the Supreme Court, it went absolutely nowhere.
Well, the interesting thing about that was that President, then Representative Ford, when he was asked what the extent of the House's impeachment power was, said essentially an impeachable offense is whatever the House of Representatives decides is an impeachable offense. And historically, it had been true that it was up to the House of Commons in England to decide what kinds of misbehavior by government ministers merited their being removed from their positions. But we have in America the idea that the judges own their offices, and so instead of being for the benefit of the public, their service is something they're entitled to. This is just a mistake.
All right. If you were sitting in Congress, is there a recent Supreme Court decision where you would have responded by pushing for impeachment?
I don't. Well, my feeling is that people need to be awakened to the fact that the behavior of the courts generally is legislative. That is, they very rarely appeal to the actual legal materials. They very rarely appeal to the history of discussion of particular legal provisions. They very rarely appeal to the background of constitutional provisions in deciding what the meaning of those provisions was supposed to be. But instead, they consult their own preferences. And once the general population is aware of this fact, I think that we could begin to see Congress resist. But at the present time, we have this general acceptance, especially in academia, but also in the intellectual class, among people here in the media, of the idea that judges interpreting, quote-unquote interpreting, really rewriting the Constitution is just the way the system is supposed to work. I'll give you an example. There's a recent example, actually, of a case in which we could see that the culture of the judiciary is entirely political, and that was this recent decision in which the majority opinion was written by Chief Justice Roberts about race-based assignment to schools. Now, as it turns out, the majority's opinion, the majority decision in that case, was one I personally find politically appealing. That is, they said that the race-based school assignment policy was not to continue. But the point I'm making is that the argument made by the majority was, if we're going to stop race discrimination, the first thing we need to do is stop discriminating on the basis of race. That's what Chief Justice Roberts said. Well, surely that's true, but what he didn't do was make any reference to the history or the meaning of the 14th Amendment. He didn't say anything about the language of the 14th Amendment, which he was purporting to apply to that case. And the reason is that the history of the 14th Amendment had nothing at all to do with racial assignment to schools. This was a matter that was supposed to be left to the states. So similarly, the dissenting justices, Justice Breyer for the minority, said, well, here we're thwarting...
But also with no reference to the original history of that 14th Amendment. We will come back to some of the startling notions advanced by our guest, Professor Kevin Gutzman, in his book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly two decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
Instability, vulnerability, uncertainty, volatility, precarious, unpredictable. Now, all of those words describe our banking system right now, as evidenced by the recent collapse of major banks. Michael Medved here for AmFed Coin and Bullion. This was the second largest bank failure in history, and the Federal Reserve has been scrambling to keep this bank run from spreading. Now, if you feel uneasy about having too much money sitting in the bank, you're not alone. Gold, silver, and platinum have had recent gains as investors look for safe places to park their money. Now more than ever, you need to call my good friends Nick Grovich and Company, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion. I've been doing business with Nick for many years, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Nick and his team of specialists will provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. If you're interested in buying or selling, call AmFed Coin and Bullion, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be just like Cal Ripken. It's definitely humbling to know that now people are calling me a hero. Instead of finding the IED with my metal detector, the IED found me first, and that resulted in double above-knee amputations. It's hard to describe the feeling of meeting somebody that you've always wanted to be like. There are people now that are looking up to you for their inspiration and to be their role model.
Visit saluteheroes.org to learn more.
I need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Using a paid tax preparer this year? Before paying someone to do your taxes, make sure they're qualified. Ask about their fees, experience, and training. Check with a Better Business Bureau. Avoid anyone who promises a higher refund. And review your tax return before you sign it. And make sure your preparer signs it too. For more tips, visit IRS.gov and search Choosing a Preparer.
Hi, this is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and best-selling author on safety and preparedness. The fact is, things are getting downright scary for everyone who's storing their wealth in the banks. We just saw the collapse of three major banks, and I would urge you to consider protecting your wealth ASAP. If even a tiny percentage of Americans attempt to withdraw their savings, we would see a collapse of the entire banking system, sending us into a modern-day Great Depression. Fortunately, there is a way for you to avoid this. It starts with contacting Advantage Gold. If you have an IRA or 401k, Advantage Gold can help convert those paper assets into physical gold and silver. This is a process that I recommend everybody use as a hedge against rapid inflation and to protect your retirement wealth from the banks. Take control of your financial safety today. Call 800-900-8000 to get your free gold investment kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
You're listening to a special presentation of the Michael Medved Show, Myths and Truths About the Constitution. For more information or to get a copy of this program, visit MedvedHistoryStore.com.
The Michael Medved Show.
Where we are proud to say every day, I am not a victim, but many people have been victimized says Professor Kevin Gutzman, have been victimized by misunderstandings and misinformation and disinformation about the Constitution of the United States. Why? Well, because usually when people can get more power, they go ahead and take it. And his book tells the story about the way that judges have maneuvered in that direction. Professor Gutzman, before we get into some of the specifics and some of the provocative contentions in your book, let me just make the case that I have heard from judicial activists and people who want to give all power to the judges. Let me make the case, and then you can bat it back, okay? The case that they make is to why it actually is better for the country if judges make more of our basic decisions about our fundamental rights or about crucial social issues in our society. The argument would be that Congress, legislatures, are by nature messy, often corrupt. They're often influenced by manias of the moment. They often will act in a hasty and irresponsible manner. But judges are by definition well-educated people. They have the public good at heart. They can sit back in contemplative peace and serenity and really give this thing the long view. So we're really better off to have judges deciding explosive issues like marriage or abortion or school policy. Judges do a better job than legislatures. What's your answer to that?
Well, that's not an answer that people often, that's not an argument that people often forthrightly make. What the judges themselves say is that they're interpreting the Constitution. But what they're really doing is substituting their own preferences in most cases involving the Constitution for the Constitution. So I say, okay, if you want to make this argument, go ahead and make it forthrightly. But let's tell the people what we're doing here is we're substituting government by politically well-connected lawyers meeting in secret in Washington for government by people you've elected. In other words, we don't trust you average rubes to govern yourselves, and we're going to take that power from you. I think that most Americans, if asked, which group do you think you would least like to see have power over the government, a final say in legislation, would probably say, well, I think lawyers. No, wait, politically well-connected people. No, wait, politically well-connected lawyers. And that's exactly the system we've come to live with, one in which these lawyers, again, purporting to be acting in the name of the people, purporting to be interpreting the Constitution, are, in most cases, involving constitutional adjudication, really just substituting their own views for what the people have agreed to live with.
Well, see, this is where I think you and I might part company just a little bit in the way that you just explained it, is that you say that that the judges are trying to apply their own ideas to cases involving the Constitution. Part of my problem with so many of recent court cases is that they apply their own ideas even to cases that really don't involve the Constitution, where the Constitution is completely silent and has nothing to say and really nothing to offer, for instance, on the issue of abortion, where all of a sudden they just seized this issue and all of a sudden, boom, it became a constitutional issue when nobody ever thought of it that way before.
Well, you and I don't disagree at all. That's what I meant when I said they were purporting to be applying the Constitution. It's a fact that virtually no state legislation has been subjected by the Constitution to judicial oversight from the federal government. And in almost every instance in which the federal judiciary is vetoing state statutes, it's doing that on the basis of judge-made rules, not the actual application of constitutional provisions as they were explained to the people when they were ratifying it. In fact, I'm only aware of one case in American history in which a state legislature was actually violating the Constitution. The statute was appealed to the Supreme Court, and in that case, the court actually upheld the statute.
And what was the statute?
The case was called Home Building and Loan Association versus Blaisdell. It was in 1938. The Minnesota legislature had decided to enact a stay law of exactly the same kind as the stay laws adopted during the American Revolution, the kind that the Contracts Clause of the Constitution was meant to prohibit. And the court said, well, okay, we understand this is the kind of a statute that the Contracts Clause was meant to prohibit, but this is an economic emergency, so we're going to allow it to stand anyway.
Uh-huh. That's based on the well-known economic emergency clause in the Constitution.
Yes, right.
Right. But see, that really is the problem here, is that one of the things that is sobering in reading your book is that you remind people that this tendency to try to seize power on the part of the judges of the Supreme Court of the United States didn't begin with Earl Warren. It began long, long before. Explain.
Well, it began with John Jay, actually, who was the first Chief Justice. You know, what happened was that in 1787-88, the Federalists, people who advocated ratifying the Constitution without amending it first, said, you don't have to worry about the extent of powers that we're granting to Congress or the federal judiciary in this Constitution. You don't need amendments before you ratify it, limiting the powers of the federal government more carefully, because the federal government is only going to have the powers it is expressly delegated by the Constitution. Expressly delegated. Those are Edmund Randolph's terms. He was a participant in the Philadelphia Convention, and he was governor of Virginia at the time. And the same phrase, expressly delegated, was used by Federalists of South Carolina and Massachusetts and Pennsylvania, and something very similar was actually said by Alexander Hamilton in The Federalist. But once the federal government was put into operation, federal judges, led by the first Chief Justice, began acting as if they hadn't made that promise and arguing that there was implied grant of power to Congress, there were implied grants of jurisdiction in Article III to federal courts. But what happened in the 1790s was that as soon as the federal courts made this power grab, the people instantly adopted the 11th Amendment to repeal their power grab. So the people were paying attention at that point and insistent on the division of powers between the federal government and the states. Actually, at the end of the 1790s, they elected the Jeffersonian Republicans to run the federal government for the following 25 years, and their chief platform plank was virtually all powers in state governments. Virtually nothing has been delegated to the federal government. So the federal courts were trying to behave this way at the beginning, but the people who made the revolution, the people who adopted the Constitution, slapped them down. And really, it was decades before you had a contrary tendency with any significant power in the federal government.
Okay, what Professor Gutzman is saying here, and it's very, very important, would mean that if you took it seriously, that if there are no specified powers for Congress or for the government other than what's in the Constitution, think of it, no Department of Education on the federal level, no department...
Child Left Behind Act, that would be unconstitutional.
Well, I mean, basically most of what the federal government spends our money on. How about Social Security, constitutional?
Well, there's certainly nothing in the Constitution that empowered Congress to do this. Now, know what I'm not saying.
Okay, well, let's get that clear. Are we saying that some future court should find some of these expansive government programs unconstitutional, like the court did in your book? You can read about it during the Roosevelt era. We'll be right back with the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution.
The Michael Medved Show.
It's all too obvious. We're being distracted by meaningless news headlines. When you dig to find the truth, you discover that the American way of life is being threatened by the institutions we used to trust. It's easy to see the future holds more food shortages, systematic controls, and government overreach. But instead of throwing up their hands, folks are preparing. They're taking steps to be self-reliant and investing in emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy to get started and join the ranks with this limited-time offer. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and get their top-selling 4-week emergency food kit. Enjoy tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get new lower pricing this week on these 4-week emergency food kits. Secure at least one food kit for each member of your family. They ship free, too. Those who know what's coming are preparing. Smart folks, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. Mother Nature is putting on some fireworks of her own ahead of the 4th of July. The National Weather Service issuing hazardous weather alerts for more than 100 million Americans during the extended holiday weekend. Forecasters saying thunderstorms are likely across the mid-Atlantic and northern plains today, with hot temperatures and excessive heat warnings across the south and southwest. The Postal Service is raising the price of a stamp from 63 cents to 66 cents. The Post Office will also increase rates for packages and marketing mail. The changes are set to begin Sunday. Over a half a billion dollars is on the line for tonight's Powerball drawing. Lottery officials say the jackpot in the multi-state lottery game will be worth $522 million. As for Tuesday night's Mega Millions jackpot, that's worth $400 million. Tim Berg, USA News.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hey, thanks for checking out the Michael Medved Show. And if you enjoy the program, please consider becoming a premium member at michaelmedved.com. You can get our full program, plus you get commentaries, a brand new podcast, In the Light of History. That's michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead banner and become a Medhead today. Above all, thanks for listening.
You're listening to a special history broadcast here on the Michael Medved Show. For more programs like this, visit MedvedHistoryStore.com.
The book newly published is The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution, and the heading for it is It's Time to Put the Constitution Back in Constitutional Law. That's Constitution, capital C, Constitutional Law, little c, little l. The author, Big K, is Kevin Big G Gutzman. He is a professor at Western Connecticut State University. Professor Gutzman, you were saying just before the break that the fact that there is not a specific function for the federal government that's enumerated in the Constitution, does that, in your opinion, make that function unconstitutional?
Certainly. Certainly it does, and that's what the Constitution says. Again, the Tenth Amendment says what people who are advocating ratification argued was already implicit, and that is that where there aren't grants of authority to the federal government through the Constitution, the powers in question are reserved to the states. So if you have a power that hasn't been granted to the federal government by the Constitution, if you don't find a power of Congress, for example, listed in Article 1, Section 8, it's been reserved to the states, and that's to be handled on the local level. Now, one issue to note here is that we've gotten away, because we have this this tendency in our political system of having the federal courts amend the Constitution when the ruling class thinks it's convenient, we've gotten away from actually using the formal amendment systems that are provided by the Constitution. In case the courts were to retrench, were to find, you know, a lot of this legislation we've been adopting actually is unfounded in the agreement that people made that this kind of government they wanted to live under, I think that the people would soon amend the Constitution to adopt some of the policies that the judges had actually forced on them. Some of them they wouldn't, though. That's part of the reason why they've been adopted by the judiciary. Some of them the people don't approve of, like this right to burn a flag. There are other various ones, too.
Do you think the answer to this is a new constitutional convention?
Well, I think we could start with educating voters, essentially, that most of what they want done by their state governments is constitutional. And in a case where the federal courts tell you that it's unconstitutional to say under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, or to outlaw topless bars in your neighborhood, or, you know, to outlaw, to have your state pass a law allowing medicinal use of marijuana. You know, there are all kinds of policies that the states have been allowed through the constitutional system to adopt, but that the federal courts aren't allowing them to adopt or allowing Congress to stop them from adopting. And I think that people would prefer a federal government instead of the national one we actually live under.
Part of the problem that I have with that is that for various reasons, aren't you shocked when you travel around the country and you see how little people know about their own state government?
They know almost nothing about them. Why would they know anything about them? They're mere administrative units of the central government.
Well, I mean, in terms of funding education, still the majority of education funding, heavy majority, is from state and local level. I mean, in terms of state police and local police, most of the areas where people actually interface with government are still state and local government, aren't they?
That's true. I don't know about the part of the country you live in. I know that in my little town in Connecticut, we have, every time the school budget comes up, we have four or five referenda before we finally agree to one. So this element of citizenship is alive and well here. I do think, however, that people would be far more involved in politics than they are if politics mattered more. If you thought that if you adopted Prop 187 in California, it might actually be implemented, you would put more effort into doing things like that.
Yeah, and this is Prop 187 was an attempt in 1994 to try to deal with the illegal immigration problem at that time, and ultimately the courts, and it didn't even make it to the Supreme Court, did it?
No.
The courts just threw virtually the whole proposition out. On what basis?
No basis.
Because the judge didn't like it?
But yes, that was, again, what I was saying earlier about this recent race and admissions decision, that not only did Chief Justice Roberts' argument have nothing to do with the Constitution, but the dissenting justice's argument about integration had nothing to do with the Constitution, and then Justice Kennedy, writing for himself, also made an argument that had nothing at all to do with the Constitution. This is where we've been left by this tendency of federal courts to grab power. They really, even if you're an originalist, even if you think of yourself as an originalist judge like Justice Scalia or Justice Thomas, you, in participating in this decision-making process, there really are no legal materials to rely on. So you have no choice but to choose among the three options, the three legislative options before you. And this is a terrible travesty of Republican government.
Okay, so what is to be done about it? What is to be done, if anything, to restore constitutional government and constitutional limits on federal power? We'll get an answer from Kevin R.C. Gutzman. He is a professor at Western Connecticut University. His book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution.
Need a great gift idea? Check out a long list of history shows at MedVidHistoryStore.com.
You're listening to a special show, Myths and Truths About the Constitution. For more information, visit MedVidHistoryStore.com. And if you want the latest with Michael Medved, catch up with him on Twitter at MedVedShow.
Most of what you think you know about the Constitution of the United States is probably wrong. And that's probably especially the case if you're a member, an associate justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. That's one of the themes, and it's a theme with which I agree. It is in the new book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution. The author is Professor Kevin Gutzman. His book, by the way, I would say the one word that comes to mind most readily in reading through his book is refreshing. And it's refreshing and important, particularly for people who may still be victimized by high school history textbooks. Just to give you a for instance, a lot of times people who remember their high school history will remember about Franklin D. Roosevelt trying nobly to save America from the Great Depression by creating an activist and compassionate federal government and trying to help poor people and starving people, but then having one humane and compassionate and worthy endeavor after another struck down by the nine old men on the Supreme Court. And it turns out, when you begin to read in this book, it wasn't so simple as that, was it, Professor Gutzman?
Well, no, it wasn't so simple as that at all. In fact, the court had been embarked on an activist period before Roosevelt came into office, and what they've been doing is enforcing laissez-faire by using what they called the liberty of contract in the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment is the vehicle for all judicial desires, and the old laissez-faire court didn't allow states to regulate the economy as they have a constitutional right to do, and didn't allow the federal government to regulate the economy either on the basis of the 10th Amendment reservation of powers that are not delegated.
Yeah, what you're saying is that the states have much bigger power to regulate the economy under the constitutional system than the federal government does.
This is the Michael Medved Show.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. Americans can't seem to reach consensus on much of anything right now, not on politics, morality, values, or even pop music. A company called MediaBase compiles airplay charts for USA Today and divides the music you hear on the radio into 12 categories. Top 40, country, urban, rhythmic, hot adult contemporary, urban adult contemporary, Christian, alternative, active rock, adult rock, and Latin. For 24 years, between 1935 and 1959, a wildly popular weekly radio and TV show called Your Hit Parade ticked off all the top songs of every variety, from Sinatra to Billie Holiday to Elvis. Today's greater diversity in music and music fans may provide for enhanced variety and choice, but it also means that niche media allow Americans to live separate lives in separate worlds with scant chance to meet on any sort of common ground. I'm Michael Medved.
I had pain in my hands that kept me from work and doing projects around the home. I heard about Relief Factor on the radio and began taking it, and it left me with pain-free hands again. I was able to do the things around the house that I enjoy doing. I'm so glad I found Relief Factor.
This is a dietary supplement. It is totally natural. I wouldn't be without it. I take it every day. It's gotten me through the hard days of winter and pandemic and more, and helps you feel better, whether it's aches and pains or Relief Factor can help. It's made from natural products, including turmeric and fish oil, that is all blended together in a proprietary blend that actually works for people around the world. It's a great product. You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. Go to michaelmedved.com and just click on the banner for Relief Factor. Some of America's most important principles, like freedom of conscience, speech, rule of law, sanctity and dignity of human life, the family, and economic freedom, are under contemporary assault. It's more important than ever to teach our nation's traditional values and timeless principles. Now, these sometimes forgotten values must be remembered and communicated, and the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College exists to accomplish just that. The Institute promotes these principles to the next generation of leaders on campus and across the country. Go to the website faithandfreedom.com and you'll find online courses on Ronald Reagan and James Madison, and above all, a vigorous defense of Western civilization and its highest values. Advocating for these timeless principles is why Grove City College continues to be a beacon in higher education. Go to faithandfreedom.com.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, Myths and Truths About the Constitution. Here is Michael Medved.
What you're saying is that the states have much bigger power to regulate the economy under the constitutional system than the federal government does.
Oh, essentially the states have all power to regulate the economy, with very few exceptions, especially working conditions, wages, hours, that kind of thing. And the court wasn't allowing either Congress or states to adopt that kind of legislation. I'm not advocating that kind of legislation. Let me put that out there. But the court was arbitrarily keeping states from doing that. And so the Democrats decided to have the opposite policy and allow anybody to regulate the economy. And so essentially the 10th Amendment, this principle of reservation of power to the states, was written out of the Constitution by Roosevelt's appointees to the court. Beginning in 1937, the court just stopped preventing Congress from adopting whatever kind of economic legislation it liked. This tendency went so far that when I was a newly graduated law degree possessor and taking the bar review course before the bar examination, which is what you have to do to become a lawyer, they told me in my bar review course, if you have an option in the multiple choice section of the exam of the 10th Amendment, if that's one of the choices they offer you, you know that's incorrect. That is always incorrect, which was true at the time. In 1990, it was always incorrect. The 10th Amendment was dead.
All right. Now, one other thing that you say in your book, which is sure to be wildly controversial, is most people learned in school that when President Lincoln made war on the seceded states of the South, the Confederate states, he did so in the name of the Constitution. And Lincoln was a pretty good lawyer and a pretty good constitutional scholar. You argue that even that decision, even that position, was not quite as clear-cut as people think.
Well, again, this is an area in which we always read legislative arguments So the typical argument for what Lincoln did in preventing Southern secession was slavery was really bad. Those people were slave owners. Therefore, secession was unconstitutional. But the fact that they were seceding in part to defend slavery from the Republicans doesn't prove that they didn't have a right to secede. And at the time the Constitution was adopted, three state ratification conventions included in their instruments of ratification a statement that we are agreeing to live under this Constitution until such time as it may be perverted to our injury, at which time we will retain the right to pull back out of the Union. Three of them said they were doing that in the course of adopting it. If you take seriously the idea that we have government by consent of the governed, this has to be an operating principle. There was actually nothing controversial about that at the time it was adopted. So my understanding of it is that the states thought at the time they entered into this union that it was one for their convenience and that if necessary they could pull out of it, just as they pulled out of the British Empire, just as they pulled out of the Articles of Confederation, which also purported, actually they, the Articles of Confederation purported to be permanent, unlike the federal constitution, which doesn't say it's permanent. So, I don't think that was controversial at the time that the Constitution was ratified.
Were those three states that put in reservations saying we reserve the right to pull out of this constitutional unit, were those three of the states that ultimately seceded?
No, one was and two weren't. They were Virginia, New York, and Rhode Island.
Yeah, and a lot of people forget also that in 1815, it was the New England states that were going to pull out of the Union at the Hartford Convention because of their upset about the War of 1812.
And they had a long-standing movement in New England to pull out of the Union. In fact, there was a senator from Massachusetts who had been George Washington's Secretary of State, Timothy Pickering, who led this movement for years. He wanted to pull out of the Union. Before that, though, there had been talk in the U.S. Senate among senators from North and South about the idea of dissolving Union. So, again, this was not a controversial position at the time of the Constitution's adoption. And, again, it's not surprising because they had seceded from the British Empire and then they had seceded from the Confederation before they made the Federal Union.
And there's another point that you make in your book, which I like, particularly because it reinforces something that I've tried to persuade my listeners about before. I don't refer to the war between the states as the Civil War, and you seem to agree with me. Give your basis.
Well, a civil war is a war within one country for control of that country. But the Confederacy had no desire to rule Maine or Indiana or Illinois. They just wanted to be left alone.
All right, and again, that's something that actually was caught pretty well in the movie Gettysburg, because at one point they are talking to some Southern prisoners, and he said, "Well, what are you fighting? Are you fighting for slavery?" He said, "No, I don't want to help slaves." He says, "I just want you to go home and get out of our country. Leave us alone." But again, Civil War, the war between the states, over. Not our discussion, however, of the politically incorrect guide to the Constitution by Professor Kevin R.C. Gutzman.
The Michael Medved Show. Become a MedHead member today for commercial-free shows, commentaries, musings, and the greatest podcast on God's green earth. All at michaelmedved.com. Medved Studio is sponsored by Bulwark Insurance Services. For a term life quote, call 800-500-5412.
55 minutes after the hour, speaking about a new book called The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution. And don't think this is a chore to read or one of these books that weighs 9 pounds. It's not. It's breezy. It's fun. It's very clear. And you can amaze, dazzle, and annoy your friends if you pick up Kevin Gutzman's book, because all of a sudden you'll know stuff about the constitutional history of the United States that that they don't know and that most Americans don't know. For instance, the idea that the Supreme Court gets to decide what's constitutional and what's not, that idea isn't even really hinted at in the Constitution, is it, Professor?
No, it's not. And actually, at the time the Constitution was being considered for ratification, its proponents did say that the court would exercise the power of judicial review, the power to hold statutes up to the standard of the Constitution. But the entire discussion was about judicial review of federal statutes. There was no talk at all of having a federal court passing on every law passed by state legislatures. And my guess is that if this power had been bruited at the time, if people who favored the Constitution had said, oh yeah, we're going to give the court a veto power over all state statutes, the Constitution would never have been ratified. There were attempts, actually, to give Congress the power to pass on state statutes in the Philadelphia Convention, and people thought, no, this was too centralizing. So we're not going to give Congress this power. We don't trust Congress. Ultimately, however, we're going to let courts do it instead. I think that nobody would ever have agreed to that.
I think you're 100% correct. You can read about this book at our website at michaelmedved.com. And it's a bracing and refreshing book that will remind you of a lot of stuff that you may once have known, maybe you never knew, but that every American should know. Professor Gutzman, what's your next project?
In September, I have a book about Virginia and the Revolution that's going to appear from Lexington. It's not about the war itself. It's about remaking a monarchical society into a Republican one. It's called Virginia's American Revolution.
Wow, and a fascinating story with a wartime governor in Virginia named Thomas Jefferson. That would be one of my few complaints about your book, is they gave you a cover illustration that shows a cartoon version of Jefferson along with Adams and Washington holding the Constitution of the United States, and Jefferson wasn't there for the Constitutional Convention.
You know, that's a funny thing that you mentioned that, because when I first saw the mock-up of that cover, which I had no part in designing, I told the woman I was dealing with, the publisher, that every semester I tell my students, somebody in here is going to tell me on the final that Jefferson wrote the Constitution. He didn't.
Okay, well,
there he is on the cover of my book.
Well, isn't that okay? You should tell your publisher, Regnery, good publisher. They should be better than a mistake like that. No such mistakes in the text of the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution, that will provide you with better understanding of the founding charter of this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Arnold Schwarzenegger has had an amazing and complicated life as an athlete, an actor, and an activist and American politician. That story is told in an unforgettable and intimate style in a three-part documentary now streaming on Netflix. It's called Arnold.
People will remember my successes, and they will also remember those failures.
Why did you give up?
My vision didn't talk about giving up. My vision was climbing that mountain.
And yes, there are peaks and valleys, and the film does cover some of the more embarrassing aspects of his personal life, but the focus is deeply sympathetic on its subject, who narrates his own story with surprising candor. Some of the footage going back more than 40 years when he first came to Hollywood is just stunning and remarkably edited, with some sympathetic attention to his time as governor of California. It's rated TV mature because of lots of harsh language. 3.5 stars. For Arnold.
For the getaway of your dreams, come to Hawaii's Playground, Ka'ana Poly Beach Resort, on the fun side of Maui, where the world comes to play. Find your spot on Ka'ana Poly Beach with 3 miles of white sand, 12 resort properties, 2 golf courses, and 2 shopping centers. Enjoy the playground of Hawaii's ancient royalty. Ka'ana Poly Beach Resort is Hawaii's original master planned destination resort and home of the Hawaii Food and Wine Festival. With views of 2 neighboring islands, you can breathe in the land's natural beauty from your favorite resort or golf fairway. Come experience Ka'ana Poly's own special brand of Hawaiian hospitality with world-class dining, relaxing resorts, water sports, and activities of every kind. For romantic, family, and great friend getaways, discover the options of Ka'ana Poly Beach Resort, where the world comes to play. Plan your getaway today. Visit KaanapaliResort.com. That's KaanapaliResort.com.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com. And an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.